Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. The Let's Get Busy podcast is brought to you by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in new ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 206 of the podcast with Sophie Henn, author-illustrator of Pom Pom Panda Gets the Grumps and Werebear, a book I named a best book ever this week. Sophie's eye for design and use of gray tone colors and strongly designed characters make her books absolute treats for the eye. Plus, they are books that feel like special moments shared between reader and child. I know you know what I mean. I love those kinds of books most of all. I can't wait for you to meet Sophie. Here is episode number 206 of the podcast with Sophie Henn. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Sophie Henn. It is a dream to be talking to you today.
Oh, wow. That sounds lovely. yes. Thank you very much for having me.
Sophie, I know you know this because I am a person that's exceedingly exuberant on Twitter. When I find a book that I like, I just sort of can't stop talking about it. And that's how I found out that you're not from around here.
No, I'm in... Well, not very sunny Sussex, over in the UK. So yeah. Yes, far away.
But it was through Werebear finding us through it wasn't through Candlewick, whomever.
Philomel.
Philomel, yeah. Wonderful that Werebear came to the States and that this amazing story. I told you up front, but I'll tell you again on record. I think it's an absolute perfect picture book, and it's one that I get sort of weepy every time I read it to a new group of children because I feel like you don't know where this is going, but the payoff is so good.
Oh gosh, thank you so much. I'll never tire of hearing that. it's really lovely, and it's lovely. It's amazing because I created this book way before I realized that I was going to be lucky enough to have a career in picture books. So it's been quite a long process creating it. And to hear now, whenever I hear that it's connected with someone or it's someone's felt an emotion for it, one of the first things I heard was that one of the test copies had gone out to a parent blogger, and their daughter had said again after they read it, and I've just burst into tears because you just, for something that you create in a room on your own to connect with people and generate that emotion is just amazing. So thank you very much.
Okay, so when did you first write? Obviously, so hearing your sentiment, I hear that you then are full-time creating illustration and stories for children. But so how long ago was Werebear? Because I know we didn't get it when it first came out. It was brought over here. Same with Pom Pom Panda, was brought over here. So when did you first even start coming up with the idea for Werebear?
It was while I was doing my MA at Brighton University, or the University of Brighton. Gone back to school. I was a very mature student, in age, but possibly not in outlook. And it was during that time. So it must have been, you see, my head for dates is absolutely appalling. But I think it was probably about, gosh, five, six years ago. And I was just doodling in a sketchbook, painting, mucking around with acrylic paints. I'm not very good with them still. And I just painted a picture of a white bear, but he was in a dark forest. And it was like, well, where was this bear supposed to be? And he looked a bit worried. And that's just literally how he just fell out of my head. I wasn't particularly thinking about what I was doing. And that's really how the story started. And yeah, it was a pretty linear process, writing Werebear. It, you know, it almost tells you, like when you create these characters, they almost sort of tell you the story. You just got to winkle it out of them. And that's sort of what happened with Werebear. But obviously that thing of children, we have these big, we construct these problems as adults, or they are problems to us as adults. And often, and we have all the layers of our grown-upness to sort of see through to get to the solution. We can't do that because of this, or we can't do that because of this. But the way a child sees it is a much more direct thing. So this boy, you know, he has this beautiful bear and the bear's too big. And as opposed to thinking, oh, well, you know, it's my pet or it's this or it's that, the child is just like, well, we need to sort this problem out. And it's just a very, you know, that sort of directness and innocence that children have, and hugely practical way of solving this problem and getting the bear to where he's supposed to be.
I mean, in that way, the practicalness of just asking, well, where, bear, is this yeah, the place to be? No, well, then where, bear? And that refrain is something that is predictable and is something I think the reader relies on to see page after page. And you dabble in a little bit of the ridiculousness and a little bit of the predictable, and I think it's that makes it work so beautifully. That and just the colors that you employ for this story, the backwashes in these like nice almost gray pastels are really beautiful to look at.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, I love a lot of mid-century artists. There's a British printmaker, he was primarily a printmaker, called Eric Revilius. And he used a lot of those colours. Then my editor, my wonderful art editor that I get to work with, she calls them non-colour colours. So those are the colours that I seem to find in between the normal colours. I pick them out. But no, thank you. Thank you very much. Well, the Werebear refrain is the repetitive sentence question throughout, and I found as a mother reading to my daughter, it was lovely to have a rhythm within the book. Missy adored Charlie and Lola by Lauren Child. I don't know whether you have that in the States, but it doesn't rhyme, but there's a rhythm to it, and I found that those were the books I really enjoyed reading. So that's kind of what I wanted to create, was a rhythm that carried you through it.
We have a lot of, okay, I need to pause for a moment because I'm positive everyone can hear it. My daughter, you know, talking to you, Sophie, often I speak to guests in the evening because the kids are in bed and asleep. And right now, my squishy, my girl, it is 4 o'clock my time and she is like way awake. So it's sort of charming. It's wonderful. So she's...
Yeah,
I'm just smiling going there.
That's like that's peak time. I like that.
It is absolutely peak time. Well, okay, let me go back to Charlie and Lola is a big deal in the States. It, I think, was even turned into an animated series.
Yeah.
But the voice in that story is really wonderful too. But what I sort of always appreciate about books specifically that are published in England and then brought over here is that you have a different approach to storytelling. It just seems like you have a different sensibility in storytelling than we do in the States. And so when you get authors in the States that are writing that way, they feel very different. Like I tend to feel like many, many, many of the books that I see come out of England from, I don't know, like from Chris Houghton and from Ed Veer and from people that I'm positive you know and are friends with, because I'm aware of your strong writing community in the London area, but you've got people that are tapped into a strong sense of character and a strong sense of place. And then we sort of get to walk into it, into a fully realized place. And it's the same way with Werebear. Well, and we'll get to Pom Pom, but walking into this setting that just feels like we've been here all along. There wasn't much setup needed. It's very easy to accept the situation that we're walking into.
Yeah, well, that sense of suspended disbelief kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, if I'm really honest, the way I write is very instinctive. And I read those articles of other writers when they're asked about their method and their practice with awe and envy because there is no method to this madness, sadly, and it's just quite instinctive. So I just plunge in, and if it feels right when it's reading it back aloud, and if it feels right, then and makes me smile or generates an emotion, then I go with it. But I think my advertising background probably has a part to play in it. I like to bring the words back as much as I can, or as much as I should. I try to strip them back, but hopefully not to the point where it feels cold. So I don't know whether that maybe contributes to that. I'm not sure. But yeah.
So when you were in advertising, were you writing copy? Were you designing? You say that, and it sort of unlocks something in my brain because of the way that you've got really strong control on the page with your illustrations. There's times when there's a lot going on and times when it just zeroes out and focuses on the character with just that single splash color in the background. Is that something that was an artistic voice developed through your work in advertising?
Yeah. I mean, I think, with advertising, you have it, very similar principles. I was an art director in advertising. I should start by saying that I was an art director, but often those lines are blurred when you're working with copywriters. So we'd work on a headline together. I couldn't ever claim to have written like loads of body copy for various things, but you'd work on a headline or a strap line or something like that. So although that wasn't my title, I contributed. And with advertising, you're looking for a strong image and a simple sort of sentence at most of text to convey quite a complicated message and grab people. And it's quite similar when you're looking at the page of a picture book, because the sum of it's the two combined give you the whole message and the whole picture in hopefully quite an arresting quite an arresting way. So yes, and I think certainly the graphic design element of that comes into play when I'm working on my layouts and just trying to make sure everyone's focusing in on the bits that I want them to focus in on, I suppose.
Well, what you're doing works, and it works really well and really beautifully. And I need to move on to the next book because we could just have a Sophie Hen love fest over Werebear. I deeply love it that much.
Let's do that.
Let's do that. can we please do it on record just so people can see that I'm legit about it? Okay. So Sophie, I'm not completely aware of how much you have already published, over across the pond where you are. But the second book of yours that we have stateside it'll come out when this posts, which is Pom Pom Panda Gets the Grumps. And it's wonderful.
Thank you.
Can I give you the opportunity just to share with us what is this story?
Well, Pom Pom is a small panda who he wakes up one morning and he gets out of bed on the wrong side, and then nothing is right, and so starts Pom Pom's day, and it kind of carries on that way. We've all had those days where you get up and everything's just wrong. It's just nothing is right. And and his friends, when he gets to the playground, his friends try to engage him and ask him to play as you would. And he's just, no, he's nothing, still nothing's right, until he loses his cool and tells everyone to go away. And they do. And then he has a little moment of realization And that sort of, that big bubble's burst. And once that big bubble explodes with these moods, you tend to feel a bit exposed and a bit, oh, what have I done? And so, yeah, he goes to make amends. But I can't tell you how, well, you know how it ends. But yeah, it, you know, maybe he ends happy and maybe not. But yeah, Pom Pom is loosely based on real life events.
Well, I love that you haven't called it Pom Pom Panda Gets the Grumps and Keeps Them Forever and Ever. But if I could read an excerpt, do you mind if I read a portion of your book to you? Okay. Because I love that spread leading to that moment, and I'll stop at the end of that moment. But you have also, you mentioned kickball, which is adorable. But going around the playground with all of these friends. "Want to play kickball?" asked Buddy. "No," huffed Pom Pom. "Want to watch ants?" asked Rocco. "No," grumbled Pom Pom. "Would you like to play catch?" asked Baxter. "No," shouted Pom Pom. "Do you want to jump rope?" asked Scout. "Go away," yelled Pom Pom. And they did. And my heart broke at that moment. I'm going to stop there just so we can collectively hear all of the listeners' hearts breaking. But that moment, as anyone else can feel, I mean, it's those truthful moments in picture books that I think work so well, because I, as a parent reading to my 5-year-old, reading to my 7-month-old, but also then my 5-year-old having that moment too, there's this unspoken connection that goes on, because I know that there have been little moments in his life when he's huffed and people have gone away. And whatever those moments are for me as well, there's a connection there that's just, Sophie gets it, or Pom Pom gets it, or whomever gets it. It's a wonderful universal experience you share there.
Oh, thank you. Well, I mean, I, you know, as a parent, witnessed a similar moment of a very cute little girl telling everyone in no uncertain terms just to go away. And then sort of shutting her door and then peering out again, go away. And then eventually everyone did. And we just heard this little hello from upstairs. And, which is heartbreaking and humorous and all of those things. And I think being a toddler is pretty tricky. You know, you are coming across so many new situations and emotions and these hormones that are you know, creating these emotions and reactions in you, and it's quite shocking. You know, you're this little tiny person going through all this stuff, trying to work out what's the right way to react to this, what am I supposed to do in this situation. And really the big thing about Pom Pom, and I know, you know, the ending might not fit, you know, the traditional sort of ending, but the main message in it is reassurance. I want kids and adults and everyone to be reassured, because we all have these moments. Grown-ups have pom-pom moments, and it's okay. And that you might solve the problem. The problem might come back again. You might have to rethink it. But these feelings and everything, it's okay. So long as you keep trying to work it out and keep learning, you know, with it, it's all right. Don't worry. Because I remember seeing almost looks of sort of shock when, you know, your beautiful child is suddenly having this huge rage, and you're shocked and they're shocked as well, because it's like, oh, where did that come from? So that's the main feeling that, or the main message I wanted to, I'm loath to use the word message, but the main message I wanted to get across with Pom Pom was reassurance. It's all right. Don't worry.
that moment that you say of the people looking on, you have that in your illustration at the end of the story. It's perfect. to wander your eye and to see Pom Pom's result in the end of the story, or perhaps Pom Pom's consistency in the end of the story, and then just to see the other onlooking children just going, yeah, like, oh, this is a thing.
Here we go.
No, it's good. It's great. And I know from looking on your website that you've got another Pom Pom coming out, or is out now where you are, or what's going on with Pom Pom the Champion?
Oh, Pompom the Champion is out over here.
Jealous.
He's coming.
Thank you. Oh, that's good. I was going to say thank you, Amazon. I know we can get it next week, but it wouldn't be ours. Yeah.
No, exactly. No, he's on his way. I'm not sure whether I'm going to tell you. I've over here completed the third pom-pom.
Congratulations on pom-pom becoming, did you sell pom-pom as a book of three, or I don't know that book contracts are sort of the same universally worldwide. I know that I've spoken to people though that get off the bat a two or three book deal, and it can be the same characters or not, or it can be what have you. What's the story that you've had with your writing so far, if you don't mind sharing?
No, not at all. I mean, Puffin have been amazing and hugely supportive, and the team I get to work with there is incredible. And you know, being a complete novice with Werebear, they have really held my hand and been amazing. I've been working on sort of multiple book contracts, and it's been kind of left up to us, me and my editor and my art editor, as to what, you know, what those contracts consist of, because obviously nobody knew that Pom Pom was going to come out in the way he has and then lend himself to a series of books. He started off being called Angry Panda. and he was a little cartoon strip of mine for my MA project. No one knew this was going to happen. But they're great. They're very, so what I've done is I've done, obviously Werebear, Pom Pom Panda gets the grumps, Pom Pom Panda, the champion. And then over here, I've done another standalone picture book, which is out over here in January, called Pass It On, which is completely different again. It's got people in it. You can spot Werebear and Pom-Pom in it, because with all the Pom-Pom books, Werebear is in there, tucked away. So actual people, actual real human people. I have finished the third Pom-Pom. It's great. They're all different, and they all have their own little, he has his epiphany, but hopefully in a funny and entertaining way, because that's the main point of these, is obviously to entertain children and engage them in books and you know, for that to go where it goes.
Congratulations. Three books that this character has been asserting himself into a story with you.
Honestly, but and in the third book, certainly the other, his friends, are starting to come forward more, and their personalities
are
becoming more pronounced. Yeah, it's love. I've got a huge soft spot for him, which just sounds weird
Okay, I don't mean to do this deliberately to draw attention to a different illustrator, but I brought up Ed Veer earlier, and I say that because I anticipate my son doing the same with Pom Pom. Earlier this week on Thursday was dress as a book character day at school, and he's a kindergartner. We haven't had this before, and he asked to go as Max the Brave, and so Amy painted, my wife painted a little, you know, black nose with whiskers, and he had a red cape, and it was adorable. And I am positive that Pom Pom is a character that children will be asking to dress as. And that is so exciting to me, because I also see my son connecting with your character that way. And so to have this grumpy character and a child, how sophisticated are children, going like, oh yeah, I'm that way too. It's lovely.
I'm going to be the scourge of mothers everywhere. They'll be getting the face paint out. My name will be Mud. The
scourge of mothers.
I remember those moments, those dressing up for book day moments as well. Yeah. It's good you got some notice. I got a few night before requests for costumes, but it's wonderful. It's so exciting. what's really exciting about that is seeing children engage with books in such an amazing and an excited way. We have World Book Day over here, and I'm from dressing my own daughter up to organising events at the school to then obviously I get to be I was illustrator for it last year and this year as well. And
congratulations!
And thank you very. I sound like I don't mean to be showy offy at all about it. It's just really exciting.
Showy offy, Sophie, you're adorable. Showy offy. No, there are times when it's completely acceptable to take pride in your honest to goodness great work.
I'm going bright red here. I don't know about that. But anyway, but yeah, and then you go on the biggest. Oh gosh, I've just been writing about it. The biggest book show on earth. Biggest book, that's it, the biggest book show on earth. And authors and illustrators go to various towns and cities around the country and put on, you know, sort of an hour, 2 hours talking to a big hall of children from the local schools about their books and illustrations and stuff like that. And those, oh, it's just so exciting. It's so exciting. And to think that one of those children might go as Pom Pom is just beyond exciting. It would be, I'd probably burst into tears again.
Well, it's going to have to be something you accept. The reality is children love not only reading picture books and loving the characters in the books, but loving seeing themselves in the characters. So we did this when we were children too. What better thing than to dress up and to be that character. So it's wonderful to have such distinct characters in your stories that will happen. Oh, and I should say, I also love as well, and this just might be your art advertising, I don't know, instincts, or it could just be your aesthetic, but I, at least in these two books, love that it feels as though the same or a similar color palette is employed. And so in that way, I love that I just feel like you have a really pretty aesthetic. You have, like, to me, like this beautiful Pottery Barn aesthetic, which is a very nice designy kind of home store over in the States.
I've heard of Pottery Barn. There was a whole Friends episode devoted to Pottery Barn. I knew exactly what, yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think the other reason why I bring it up, and I mean this as a high compliment as well, I hope you'll take it as such, but Molly Idle, of Flora and the Penguin and many other wonderful books like that. Molly's book, I think actually specifically Flora and the Flamingo, was just in an ad for Pottery Barn in the way that she was surprised to see it. Someone was looking through a catalog and there was a bedroom staged with, you know, things on the walls and whatever. And Flora and the Penguin was just sitting there on the shelf looking right out from the catalog. And I thought, like, there is a design element to your books that read so well. So that's maybe where I am drawing it back to advertising. But that I think is also a testament to your great ability to edit down to the simplest shape, the simplest colors, the ones that speak loudly without overpowering or competing with one another. You do it very effectively.
Thank you very much. I could play around with colors for ever, basically. So yeah, it's a good job I have deadlines, or I would. But thank you very much. Yeah, it is trying to create something like I said before. I suppose that's clear enough that you really get that clear sense of what's going on, and you know, your attention's drawn to the area that I want your attention to be drawn to, I suppose. And I think that definitely does. There's definitely a lot of the graphic design and advertising, I don't know, background that comes into that. I think quite a lot of Chris Horton is he is a graphic designer as well, yeah, as being a hugely successful and wonderful picture book maker. And Eric Carl, I think, worked in advertising as well. So it does seem to be an area or a skill set that can lend itself across, I think.
It can, yeah. And I'm actually coming to mind a couple of my author illustrator friends that have come from advertising too. And as we're now talking about it, and having not talked at such great length about it before, and now I'm starting to go, oh, there's this similar sort of reasoning in all of these people that I can see a through line, like, oh, this is, I like this. This is there's a certain sentimentality in the way that you create your stories and your words and position things that way, that it's good. It's very good. I love it. I love it. Hey, Sophie, what does it mean to be an author, illustrator? This is going to be horrible for me to ask this. I apologize in advance for not phrasing it right. Well, first off, maybe I should just be completely self-deprecating and say a number of my friends and I in this wonderful Kidlit community, in particular Carter Higgins and Danielle Davis, who of Design of the Picture Book blog and of This Picture Book Life, Carter and I in particular were like, I can't read Werebear without saying Werebear. No, and so going into this with you, I was like, I need to not do an accent. Don't do it. But there's, don't, anyway. No, I'm stopping it now. But in Pom Pom Panda, there are so many moments that I'm like, oh, these are not typical English words or American words. This is going to be like another one that I'm going to slip into pronunciation and not even catch myself. But I mean that in a lovely way. I really do mean. Actually, I've told you that I just today came back from the American Association of School Libraries conference, and Sophie Blackall was there, and a couple of our friends and I were saying, like, there's this really funny thing that in America, the British accent is so charming and sophisticated and intelligent sounding and all this. And I just have to imagine the American accent is just crunchy and rough and and not
it's
nice.
Glamorous. Oh, I think it's, yeah. It's
I can't believe that for a moment. Well, I'm glad we have that awkwardness out of the way. Thank you very much for letting me vent to you.
I'm glad I sound intelligent. Thank you, my accent.
Okay, so Sophie, when you set out to write picture books, when you were there thinking about Werebear and where this would go, do you at all think of the American market? Is that a thing? I wonder also if people in America think of if their book will be republished in other countries or not. Or do you just sort of go, I'm going to make this special book for me and for the readers that I love, and we'll see where it reaches?
The latter, really. I mean, again, this is going to sound really odd because I've harked on so much about my background in advertising, but I really don't think about a market when I'm writing and illustrating or thinking up a character or anything like that. Certainly, I mean, Werebear, this was all just an amazing dream that was probably never going to happen when I wrote that. With Pom Pom, when it became, you know, a job, a wonderful job, but, you know, it was like, okay, so I'm contracted to do this. The subject matter was already there. It was, like I say, it was from a comic strip I created for my MA final project. I don't think I could sit down and actually create a picture book for a specific market. I think there has to be truth in them. I have to care about the character and like the character. Faults and all, and I think, you know, like as Homer Simpson said, it's funny because it's true. And I think that it's really it has to resonate with me, I suppose, before I can hope for it to connect with anyone else. So I don't know whether that sounds incredibly arrogant. I'm just doing all this for me, because I'm certainly not. And as I said before, I'm inclined to cry when I hear that people have you know, taken Pom Pom under their wing or asked for a second read of Werebear. But yeah, it's very instinctive, and I'm too scared, I think, to try and analyze it too much in case the magic goes away, in case the magic power goes away.
I was just going to say that in regard to that magic that the books have, I think that there is this thing where, because there's this idea that you're making it just for you or you're not considering a market, it ends up resonating even more deeply, because there's an intimacy to it. There's a personal approach to it. I don't know that there are, I think, a lot of people that I've talked to that it's felt that way, where I thought this book is going to echo with millions of people. And yet to know that really what that speaks to is that we all sort of feel like we're all different, but we're not. We're all sort of the same. And it's good that we're all able to share in the human experience. And so that's what I see in your books. And so I'm glad that you could share something like, I wrote it down. I don't think about the market when I write, because I think if you did, there would be something contrived about the story and you would know it right away. And maybe there have been moments in you writing, or anyone listening trying to write as well, where you just realize when you start thinking about the audience too much, then you're starting to get in the way of the art doing the work itself.
Yeah, exactly. I think it would possibly start to feel contrived. I think it would if I did it. I mean, people write and approach this, this job from so many different ways. And I certainly couldn't even begin to speak for anyone else. But yeah, for me, it has to be, it's pretty instinctive, and it just has to have that truth in it. And be the sort of book that I think I would have picked up and read to my daughter, when she was little. But yeah, I think it has to have that. I have to connect with the character, and you know, you've got to care for them a bit, I think.
Well, I think whatever set of intuition tools you're using are exactly spot on, and I'm glad that you're doing it. And I'm glad, more importantly, the Philomel sees what they see in your books and have brought them to our readers as well, because I know that it's hard to get all books published to all readers, and more importantly, to get your book to the right readers. Some readers may never find that book that really would be the perfect match for them. And I think that's where booksellers and school librarians and teachers and all them come in, and festivals, having festivals where you're reading in front of people. But I'm thankful for what you're doing. And I know that this could turn into another 5-hour love fest if I keep going, because I do sort of feel this deep connection with your books. But I should just say, before I ask this last question, that I'm thankful, Sophie, that you chose to write for children, and more in particular, that you chose to write these stories for children, because it's very special to me to be able to read these books in front of children, in front of my own children, and in front of the many children that I work with every day. And that's a beautiful thing that you're putting back into the reading community. So thank you for that.
Well, again, welling up. Gosh, I sound like an emotional wreck over here. Thank you so much. That's such a lovely thing to say. And thank you for reading them, you know, and all the amazing stuff that you and all your fellow librarians do, getting books out there and into the hands of children, because it's so important that they connect with books at that young age, you know, for many reasons. If not the love of reading as they grow up and where that takes them. So thank you back.
Okay, there's no way to end it. I'm just going to do a cold ending. Here we go. Sophie, my final question that I've asked guest after guest coming on, and is this, and I'm looking forward to seeing your response. I'm assembling an all-star kid-lit kickball tournament, and I would love to know what one person alive or past from all of children's literature you would want on your team and why.
Oh, there's no, that's just out the blue. Children's literature, past and present.
Oh, yeah. By the way, listeners, I am always so good about sending guests sort of an email of what to be prepared for before we chat. But as I said, as you can probably hear in my voice, I was away at a national conference the entire week long. So Sophie's really getting this cold.
So sorry, it was someone from children's literature, alive or dead. And this is real or fictitious?
Can correct.
A character.
I'm happy for you to interpret it whichever way you'd like. It often does get at sort of the, who is the person you admire, or who has influenced you, or just who's your best mate that you would want to be out there with.
On you know, doing battle on
sure, after. Doing battle on the kickball field, of course.
Well, it's going to be Pippi Longstocking. I'm wearing a t-shirt. I want some sass on my team, and she's gonna bring it. So I go for Pippi Longstocking.
That sums up this conversation perfectly, Sophie. Thank you so much again for everything you're doing and for being out there, and also for connecting with me so that I could have this moment to not only share how much I love what you're doing, but also to learn more about all of these experiences already in your life that have informed the person that you are, who is the person behind these books. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland, and by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the books at allthewonders.com. Our theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, there are a ton of great episodes of Let's Get Busy archived and waiting for you at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com. And if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on the blog or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that is a very good thing indeed. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.